Let the trap!
You are listening to What the Trap!
Are you ready to truck it? It's time for your Nooner with Dooner. Welcome to Wednesday. Special Wednesday, by the way. Got to give a little congratulations to my boys, everyone else's kids out there who has got a last day of school today. I know it is for us out this way. My boys are super excited in for a long summer. Seems to end a lot earlier, too, than it did when I was a kid. But a little cowbell for all of you out there. Before we get into some good news, some bad news, and what's going on in this world of freight, because here's a quote to start the day. Maybe it's not the best foot to get started off on. But it's shoots not green. Take a look at this right here. It says, when we came into 2023, we were certainly optimistic about an improving half to 2023 environment. As the year's gone on, we've been concerned around what's happened over the rest of the year. I don't have any green shoots for you this morning. That is from Darren Field, president of Intermodal at J.B. Hunt. He said that Tuesday at Wolf's Research Annual Transportation Conference. Intermodal is feeling the pain. Todd Maiden reports large declines in imports, around 21% year-over-year in April at the nation's top 10 ports. That's according to the Counter Report. They've highlighted shippers' order restrictions and what they've had on freight flows. Maybe that will change. We're going to look in the crystal ball of Sonar a little bit. Couple more headlines before we get into things today, though, because this is kind of a follow-up on a story we talked about back in March. FreightWorks, they had that mass firing. Take a look here. They let go a lot of their staff, including a buddy of mine I know, Jordan Kidd. He used to do their Life by the Mile podcast for them. Well, former employees are now suing the North Carolina-based trucking firm over these mass firings. Clarissa Haas has the story up on FreightWaves.com, but basically what happened is these employees are saying they failed to give them that 60-day notice before shutting down. In fact, the video that the company itself put out talked about how it all came together abruptly. When it came out in March, they said, we are unable to see a path forward after a few of their core contract customers abruptly demanded significant rate reductions amounting to millions of dollars. The death knell occurred when one of FreightWorks' largest customers, they just pulled a significant percentage of their freight. And that was lights out. But of course, this impacted a number of employees that worked there, and now they want their own retribution. One slightly good positive story, though, before we jump into things. House Transportation Committee has okayed $755 million to expand truck parking. John Gallagher says the legislation to invest $755 million over 3 years to expand truck parking, it has advanced the House, and it passed it on Tuesday. It won assurances by letting Congress know where these funds would come from. The legislation, though, it now has to be approved by the full House, with the companion legislation in the Senate yet to be considered in committee. So still a long way to go, as it always is. Anything government. On the show today, I'm talking to Sonar architect Daniel Pickett about how high-frequency data in FreightWaves Sonar foresaw the freight recession. We're going to talk about the development of Sonar, how it all came together, how it works. We cite it so often. Why don't we talk about it a little bit? We've also got FreightWaves' Alan Adler here. He's going to be talking about why electric and autonomous vehicle stocks have been cratering, what it means for there, where are we going, what it means for the rest of the decade. Plus, he also got over to Peterbilt. He took a ride. He got a drive and the impressions from the 589, their newly released truck. He'll tell us all about what he saw. So let's tip the band and we'll get into it. Supply chain challenges are not always easy, but the commitment from the team at Dunavant Logistics to take on that responsibility is unwavering. Dunavant, logistically speaking, they're at the center of it all. Visit them at dunavant.com. But right now, let's visit with our Midwest Bureau Chief. It's Mr. Alan Adler. Alan, looking good today.
Thank you, brother. Good to see you. I like your jersey. Good job.
The pollen has receded enough that I was finally able to take the glasses off.
I see that. I still like the glasses, but okay. It's you, man.
What, have you thought about designing your own truck tech shirt?
I was complimenting you on the jersey. I like the jersey, the What the Truck jersey.
Well, I was going to say, have you thought of getting your own truck tech version? I know you could wear it to the Guardians game when we get to Cleveland.
I'm looking behind you, and I definitely want to get something for behind me on my show, right?
Yeah.
The truck tech show. I definitely want to do that. So I'll talk to erstwhile executive producer Todd about how I do that. But yes. Hey.
You, speaking of good-looking things behind you, you got to go out to this Peterbilt event. You saw their do 589 in action. Tell me a little bit about the Texas Motor Speedway and what went down over there.
Well, they took over the whole place, which is interesting because they probably didn't need it all, but they did do a special truck show, all Peterbilts, 200 of them, basically, some classics, some, current trucks. Almost all of those are probably in use. But so they had a little walk around for, outside the track for the truck show. I think this is all stuff that Jim Allen shot out there, which is awesome. He came up from Houston to do this. And the new truck, they made a big deal of it. They really did. And they brought out like 900 VIPs, dealers and then the customers. And of course, the plant in Denton isn't very far away. So, a lot of those folks, 600 or so of those folks came out. So something over 3,000 total people for this. Now, what's really interesting, though, Dooner, and you know this, the 589, which really dates back, earlier versions date back to about 1954. This truck is not the main truck for Peterbilt, but it is the one that they're noticed by. I mean, look at the long hood, look at the flat grill and all that. This is the truck that people customize. This is the truck that, has personality to it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with a 579, but people don't get excited about, customizing a 579. Here you've got your 15-inch air cans, you've got your 7-inch exhaust, vertical exhaust. So all those things that make a truck, right? I mean, this is the real deal. This is the truck that truck people drive. It isn't one that, necessarily that, I mean, some big fleets buy it, but mostly it's small fleets and owner operators who buy these and, either customize them or don't, but they're personalities, that have these trucks, right?
What was your impression seeing it in person? Did you get to go inside it? Did you get to go around the track?
I did. I took a couple loops around the track, about a mile and a half track. I took a couple loops. My shifting isn't that great, but I got through it. And I would tell you that for all the great looks, this truck rides so smooth, it's unbelievable. I mean, you can still hear the motor, but they've done so much in terms of, sound deadening and things like that, that you can actually have a conversation in the truck. I wouldn't put it up there with an electric truck in terms of quietness, but it certainly is very quiet and is super well-mannered, steering return, things like that. I mean, all of these things that the trucks are starting to get now to make them more comfortable to drive so that drivers aren't so stressed out and fatigued, they've adopted here. Probably the biggest thing, though, is that this truck now is on the 2.1 meter cab size. So it's wider than the 389 that it replaces, and it does allow Peterbilt to make one single cab size for all of its full-size trucks. That's a big deal because you save a lot of money and a lot of effort if you're not building and buying parts for two different platforms. So, getting this on the 2.1 meter platform was a very big deal. On a practical level, what that does is it increases the room between the seats, and it makes getting the sleeper cab, if you're driving a sleeper, it makes getting back there much easier. You don't have to kind of twist and turn and contort to get back into the back.
How did that windshield look in person? That was the number one thing that when I put a poll out there, drivers had remarked about. Some liked it, some didn't like it, some liked the old school styling, and then said the windshield detracted from it. What does it look like in person?
I didn't really notice it, but then I'm not an expert, and I got to be careful here because where I think my expertise lies is more in the business side of things, less on the product. So it didn't stand out to me. I don't have a real dog in that fight, and I think that, the drivers are the ones who are going to notice that stuff. And I think Peterbilt's probably listening. I don't think anything's going to happen right away. They'll start building these, by the way, in the beginning of 2024. The first 589 will be, special, will have special plates in them to show, where they stand and in terms of being unique. They're going to literally start at number one and go up to 589. So, this is not a truck that has been a huge seller for them. I would call it the 389 came out in 07. They've sold about 110,000. So you can do the math and see that it's, 8,000-9,000 a year. So nothing like the 579, which is kind of the flagship for Peterbilt.
What's the sticker on this? Do they give any numbers out?
No, they really don't. The funny thing about trucks, we used to come out of the car business, of course, at GM, and we always announced, manufacturers suggest real retail price. Didn't really get into that. I mean, you hear it somewhat, Dooner, on electric trucks because, they're so much more expensive than diesels, right? I mean, so you say, well, it's three times the cost of a diesel, and a diesel's $125,000 or whatever. But since these are all spec'd individually, there really is no kind of base price. I mean, you're going to have a list of specs, your arm's length. to pick how you want the truck done.
So California must be seething. Why are they selling diesel trucks? Why is Peterbilt making diesel trucks? Ban all the diesel, right? There's all this legislation coming in, but I just read an article of yours too, and it talked about how desperate AV and EV stocks are getting, especially in this market where valuations have been drawn down. What's going on there? What is going on with this future of trucking and this very near, maybe fatal future for some of these companies in your article?
Yeah, it's a sorting out process right now, and there is going to be carnage. There's no question about it. I mean, you know, just this week we were writing, and we don't spend a lot of time on Wordsell Motors, except that it's a fascinating story. You know, they were going to do a commercial, are doing a commercial pickup truck, you know, kind of a class three type of truck, you know, aimed at, you know, construction and things like that. But that place has been a soap opera since it started. And, you know, just this week, just Monday, the board authorized a what's called a reverse split, because their shares are selling about 30 cents. And the NASDAQ was going to kick them off the exchange, basically, and say, look, you've got to be at a buck for 30 days. You can't be under a dollar for 30 days straight. So one way to get around that is to do a reverse stock split. So they just did that. I didn't look today, but the stock is probably about $4. So there's fewer shares. Didn't really do anything for them financially. It's more of a cosmetic thing. But it sort of dodges that bullet of being delisted. We had a story on that yesterday. But they have bigger problems, honestly. I'm just using one example here in Lordstown. They sold the plant that they got essentially for free from General Motors for about $230 million to Foxconn. Now, Foxconn is the group out of Taiwan that makes Apple iPhones and wants to get into the electric truck business. You know, they've got some business from Fisker for the next Fisker car coming out, electric car. They took over as the contract manufacturer for Lordstown, as well as buying the plant. But there was some of the money they didn't fork over because they were going to buy shares in Lordstown. And they said, wait, you guys are under a buck. That breaks the deal. We're not going to buy the $47 million. Well, Lordstown doesn't have a lot of money. It's got about $165 million on the books right now. That won't get you very far if you're trying to build trucks, so, or even design new products, you know. So we'll see what happens over there. There's a chance that Foxconn will go through with it. I mean, you know, Lordstown's one of those companies, a little bit like Nikola, should have probably, you know, had a fork put in a long time ago, but didn't. And so they're still kind of limping along. Nikola is another one. We talk about them all the time, Duner, but, you know, they're compelling, really. And they're out today just saying, please, please, please vote for this proposal two, which will essentially allow us to double the number of authorized shares in the company. And that will help us pay our debts because we owe a hedge fund a bunch of money and we don't have the cash for it. So, you know, there's that.
Hold on a second. Alan, slow down a second. Didn't Nikola just make a pivot too? Didn't they announce that they're not doing BEVs, right, with Iveco, and they're moving on to the fuels? Like, what is going on there?
Okay, so Iveco, basically, Garrett Marks, who's the CEO of Iveco, left the board, and now they decided that they would sell Nikola would sell its stake in the joint venture they have in Germany to build trucks. They got $35 million, which is, you know, a few days of operating costs, I guess. And but I think you have to watch Iveco, because in the background, I could see a play where if this share authorization fails and Nikola is running out of money, I could see Iveco coming in. This is a super cheap way to get into this market. You know, Iveco operates in Europe, but it could get entry into this market by essentially, buying Nikola, and, you know, be a lot cheaper than what, you know, Volkswagen had to pay, say, for Navistar, about $3.7 billion a few years ago. They could get in this market for next to nothing if they chose to do that. And I think it's interesting too, because Mark's leaving the board, you know, they've sort of broken up all of the ties between the two, which could make a clear path for Iveco to come in.
What about in the autonomous space? What about Too Simple? They have been nothing but drama for what seems like the past couple of years now. What's going on there? They're just hemorrhaging along the road.
Well, you know, what's interesting about them is their stock is up by 100% in the last week. Now, that's off a pretty low base, right? I mean, you know, 82 cents or something like that. They're around $2 a share now. They also announced that they're laying off another 300 workers. And more more surprisingly to me anyway, is they said, you know what, we've been talking about selling off our China business. They certainly talked that way when they were, you know, being looked at by the federal government for, you know, sharing technology with China and things like that. The government essentially cleared them, but put, you know, some level of oversight in place. Now, two civil servants saying, you know what, we like our China business. We're going to keep it. And we think that it's going to do well for us. So a real pivot there, you know, cutting another 300 workers, that was a surprise because back in December, the Wall Street Journal reported that TuSimp was going to cut 50% of its workforce. They ended up cutting 25%. But now if you take this cut, you're right there at 50 or 55%. So, you know, it was it done in two swaths? It's hard to say. But the fact is that they are retrenching to stay alive. They're very concerned about cash, even though they have more money than most companies, at least as of the last time they reported. They're in trouble with the NASDAQ, not because of their share price, but because they haven't filed financial reports. And, you know, they have to do that. They just hired another auditor. The last one left because they thought, you know, there was too much sort of a reputational risk around working with TuSimp. So the drama continues. We'll see what happens, but nobody can really point to the reasons why the share price has essentially doubled in the last week.
What about Embark too? They're another one. I remember I had their founder on like the day they rang the NASDAQ bell, and it didn't turn out too well for them because I think ever since that day, it's been going down pretty far as well. They're not doing so hot, are they?
No, they let go 70% or in the process of letting go 70% of their workers. They started that in March, and I'm not exactly sure where they stand. They've rather disappeared from the scene at this point. So whatever comes of Embark or doesn't come of Embark will not look anything like what for a while seemed like a pretty exciting place in terms of, you know, really advancing. They were the first to drive across country autonomously. Now, of course, with safety drivers, but, you know, running their system. Alex Rodriguez is a personal favorite of mine. I think he's a really smart guy. But, you know, even his co-founder, Brandon Moak, left the company, you know, took a buyout. So things have really kind of gone south on them. So they're out of the picture right now anyway. I don't know that they come back. I mean, maybe they've got some IP that could be sold or something like that. Maybe they become consultants to others. It's really hard to say. We'll just have to watch and see.
So this whole space that you cover, it sounds like we're talking about a bunch of zombies here. Is there one that you like? I mean, this all sounds like these are all companies that people are just watching them bleed out. There's vultures flying around. They want them to bleed out. They're going to take the tech. And that's the end of the story for some of these. What is good?
Well, you're going to have a couple that will emerge. I'm not sure if I've got it right, but right now, you know, Torc Robotics, which, you know, is essentially an independent subsidiary of Daimler Truck. Therefore, money is not an issue. They're not public. Daimler is, but they're not. And so their financials are not broken out. They're being very deliberate in the way they're doing things. They just announced a deal with CR England to do some test runs and things like that. You know, they don't seem to be terribly concerned about, oh, we've got to have some, you know, commercial route figured out by the end of 2024. The two that are continuing to pursue that are Kodiak Robotics, again, private companies. So we don't really know their finances, but they operate, you know, we've had Don Burnett on this show. I'm sure you've had him. I've had him. Great guy, smart, smart guy. You know, they seem to have a pretty good business running there, but it's way hard to know the actual financials. The other one, of course, would be Aurora. They've also said they'll be doing a commercial route, you know, no driver by the end of 2024. And they continue to make, you know, some announcements that suggest they're getting closer. So those two right now, Aurora and Kodiak and Torc 3, I guess, would seem to be the ones who are doing the best. Waymo has kind of, you know, sort of taken a pause on what they're doing on the truck side. They did just announce some stuff with Uber, which was interesting on the car side. But on the truck side, they seem to be, you know, pretty quiet right now. And of course, you mentioned Embark. You know, so, you know, it's really hard to say, you know, leaderboard kind of question. But right now, the ones that would appear
make a decision, Alan, make a call. We got Kodiak. We'll give you Kodiak on that one. One little cowbell for that. Hey, we'll see you over in Cleveland, my man. The Guardians. Yes. Who are they playing? Who are they playing?
It's the Oakland A's. Who have basically shed everybody who's worth anything.
They spread it out.
They've given everybody away again.
Well, yeah, I know. I was seeing footage from their stadium, and it was like on YouTube. All these people try to go there on like the least attended days possible at their stadium. Are they just going to give that to the port? I don't know. Vegas doesn't want them stadium. Anymore.
They're apparently moving to Vegas. They will
no,
be.
The Vegas is like, we're sick of it. We're sick of waiting for you.
I thought of this the other night. They're the first team to have operated in four cities. Can you name the cities the A's have played in?
No, I can't. I don't care enough.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I'll tell you who they are. Philadelphia, Kansas City, Oakland, and now Vegas. Four cities.
Well, the Vegas said the deal might be off, Alan. So we'll have to see.
Well, who knows? We'll see.
We'll have to see.
Yeah, but they got the worst stadium ever, just so you know.
Well, I've been there, but I've only seen football games. They used to have it where there'd be a baseball diamond in the middle of a football field. Like, what was that?
Yeah, as the stadium goes, I've been to 47 major league parks. It's among the worst.
Well, you'll be to one more when we get to Cleveland. So see you in a month, Alan. Take it easy, buddy. Everybody go check out Truck Tech. Meanwhile, fighting fire with fire. Over here. Speaking of fighting fire with fire, you got hot markets, you got cool markets. One way to get on top of them is FreightWave Sonar. We talk about it all the time. We cite it all the time. How does it even work, though? Let me show you how the crystal glass is blown.
Exactly.
What is up, man?
Not a long time listener. Second time I've been on the show. The first time, I don't think I was part of the show. It's been a good 4 years.
When did you guys get the custom shirts here?
So custom shirts, the nerdery is, it goes back to a Chris Farley, David Spade joke from Tommy Boy. And so I think one day, I can't even remember. I think, Craig said, just go back there and take your calculators and go figure it out. And so we were like, okay, well, the nerds will retire to the nerdery and with our calculators. And so that's kind of what we called our section of the office. And now we have that's the Slack channel. So we had nerdery shirts made.
For those that don't know, they've never met you before. They missed that, and I missed that episode.
Sorry,
on the show. Who is Daniel Pickett?
Yeah,
what's a CTO do at a company?
Exactly. So I started at the company as the chief data scientist, and now I've taken over software development. I lead the team of data nerds, of software nerds, of just kind of freight data mad scientists who are really, we gather data from hundreds of different sources. We, study what are the patterns we see in there, what are the actionable insights that we can actually help people make better decisions around their logistics and supply chain networks. So, it's math nerds, it's programming nerds, it's software guys who think about site reliability and security, and, customers trust us with a lot of data. So we've got, constantly pressures to keep cybersecurity threats away. We're always trying to push the envelope on how do we make the data cleaner? How do we make it better? How do we tell people, hey, this is the right decision to make, and not have them come back a few days later and tell us, hey, you were full of it, man. So
sure.
So yeah, we have a team of awesome freight data nerds. We've been at it almost 6 years now. And, we were into supply chain data way before it was cool. That's in the pre-COVID era. When you told people what you did and they just fell asleep instantly. Since COVID, everybody's got a story about supply chain now. So
well, they know what it is. I mean, but sometimes it's like it makes them a little bit too confident in maybe what they know.
For sure.
But we'll educate some people. But before we do that, before we go back in time and we talk about building Sonar up from the ground, what's like the 30-second elevator pitch on what you'd say Sonar is right now?
Yeah, so I think Sonar is probably the fastest, most up-to-date source for what's happening in the physical economy. The physical goods economy, moving things all over the world, you're not gonna find anywhere that you can get more current data on what's happening right this second, whether it be in China, whether it be in Vietnam, India, whether it be in Kansas or California or Florida, Miami, whatever, ports, air, rail, trucking. We spend a lot of time and a lot of brain cells chasing down the freshest data we can find, getting it as clean as we can. And that's what Sonar is. It's some people call it the Bloomberg of the physical goods economy or of supply chain.
Sure. Well, but what was it? Like, I've been at this company for four years, and I heard there were big changes before I even got here, and there's been a ton of changes in the four-plus years that I've been here. I think we even have a picture of a very early...
Yeah, this is one of the early pitch decks.
How did you meet Fuller, first of all?
So I met Fuller. I was at a insurance company, and I was doing kind of like quantitative analysis on bonds, and I covered rails, I covered transportation companies. And so, you know, we met at the North American Commercial Vehicle Show in 2017. You know, and I was just looking for what are interesting news outlets saying about commercial vehicle trends and electrification, and stumbled upon the FreightWaves blog and said, wow, these guys are in Chattanooga, Tennessee. I'm in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And then heard that they were looking for a chief data scientist. And I said, I think I could do that. And that sounds pretty exciting to get in something new. So, you know, I've spent most of my career before in financial services, so capital markets. And trucking, you know, there's a lot of parallels between what happens in trucking and what happens in, you know, the stock and bond markets. You know, and I think you go back to the 80s, the way that we traded bonds in the 80s, massive information disadvantages. Brokers have these huge advantages, you know, wildly cyclical markets. You know, equities were that way in the 50s when there were hundreds of thousands of brokers, you know, and there were exchanges in every different city. That's kind of how trucking feels today and how maritime feels today. And so, so you know, we said there's a massive opportunity to bring, you know, transparency, really good fresh data, potentially some risk mitigation tools to this industry. And so that's what got me excited and got me here, and that's what we're still trying to do.
So you had to have some focus in the beginning. What was the initial sort of data sets that you were pulling together, and what did the 1.0 sonar sort of look like and feel like?
Yeah. You know, they say if you're not embarrassed by your original product, you know, then you weren't releasing early enough. You weren't pushing the envelope hard enough. And so, you know, early sonar was certainly inspired by some of those financial systems like a Bloomberg. You know, I came from kind of a more fixed income bond world. Craig used to be a day trader. But certainly, I mean, if you look at sonar, you can see there's some very financial platform inspiration going on there.
Sure.
You know, one aspect that's different is just that geography is such an important component. So Sonar 1.0 was you get a chart, you get a map, that's it. What are the early data sets? You know, one of our first hits is still our absolute banger. That's the tender reject index, as well as, you know, tender volume stuff. And then figuring out the concept of head haul, you know, what has net inflows, what has net outflows. You know, that was really important to us early. But originally, you know, we were going to launch a futures market. And data and analytics was something we needed to support that. So and so was news and commentary. And so, you know, the funny story about FreightWaves.
But I got to ask you. So you're in a room just like you're like a data nerd. And do you have Craig Fuller screaming at over your shoulder about the waterfall theory of freight?
Oh, 100%.
What this actually like, means, because data, as you full know, right? Like data is just data. That doesn't mean anything unless it's
context.
Context, right? And the biggest context, and I think the thing that it is always sort of espoused to us, those of you who don't get to go to our events, is Craig going on a spiel about the waterfall theory of freight.
100%. And you can see that now in the FreightWaves Academy stuff that we're putting out. Like, you can, there's really good lessons on this. But yeah, I would say that, you know, the secret sauce, especially early, was that you had, you know, math and data nerds, and they're sitting in the same room with these like freight experts. And so, you know, we worked with Craig early and Zach Strickland early, and, you know, learned a ton from David Bradford and you know, Mike Vincent, who used to be on the show, Dean Croak, who used to work with us. All these guys were telling us stories from their career and how things were working. And then, you know, we could go into the data and find those patterns and say, aha, you're telling me about driver resets and how the ELD is affecting them. We go look at ELD data. Sure enough, you see guys getting a traffic jam and go, I'm off duty. Maybe I'll be stuck here 30 minutes and I'll call this my reset. You know, and you'd talk about, you know, hot freight that had fallen out of the waterfall on contract basis and has to be moved today, or maybe even has a pickup date of yesterday flowing through the data. We know that's hot freight. That's a signal of shortening tender lead times. That's a signal that rates are going to go up. And sure enough, you know, the stories these, you know, kind of experts told us about their experience in freight, we were able to look into data and find similar patterns. And that's kind of when we said, hey, there's something here to this company of getting freight experts and data nerds together and just having them explore. That's the early secret sauce happy accident.
So one of the stories of FreightWaves, and if you've ever heard, and we don't have to go into the full story of FreightWaves, but one thing Craig always talks about is sort of those pillars. And initially we had this idea of the freight futures market, right?
Sure.
And how do you inform a futures market? Well, you need a news aspect, and then you need some sort of tracking, right? You need
Sort of information that gives people, you know, confidence about what their view on the market is.
Was that sonar always at first? Was it always to tie into that sort of future thing? And when did that pivot happen? Yeah. Where you're like, wait a second, when did you have the realization that this actually speaks to the entire market? It can talk to CPG and it can talk to truckload, and of course it can talk to ocean.
You know, it's tempting to say there was this great aha moment, but it was really a series of revelations along the way. You know, like you said, futures was the genesis of the company. And, you know, it was, well, you need news commentary and you need other data. So FreightWaves is largely the story of side projects going really, really well. So I think we had those conversations, and then we started to, as we had our first events, we would show people sonar. They'd come on our news and they said, yeah, we're not really ever going to do the futures thing, but, you know, that could really help us with our capital planning, with our daily decision making, with how we order our day and what loads we have to cover at 8 a.m. and what loads can wait until 2 p.m. So, a series of revelations. And then, you know, you go and you meet somebody in air cargo and they go, wow, the spot load data in trucking is really highly correlated to air cargo. Wow, that's fascinating. And then you meet somebody in maritime and, hey, maritime volumes and rates seem to lead trucking volumes by about the time it takes to cross the Pacific. Oh my gosh, there's a correlation here. And so slowly, you know, it kind of became apparent that there was something even bigger than our initial goal here. And that there really is a need for clarity and transparency around decision making. But using stale data to make decisions, it costs millions and billions of dollars. And you see these companies that go out of business versus the companies that maybe make smart decisions and maybe pare back some of their, you know, their asset count at the, you know, as rates start to decline. And
well,
it really does.
I used to work as a marketing director for a freight company.
Yeah.
And we would look at things like the cash report.
Yep.
And one thing I would think is before I was doing the marketing, I was in the operations side. And one thing that would annoy me about these cash reports is it's like I'm writing about things that happened 2, 3, 4, 6 months ago.
Sure.
Who is this advising? Like, is this just like cover your ass type data to say I made a right decision on the market? Because it doesn't advise. It doesn't inform me of anything.
Yeah.
It tells me of what already happened. But if I'm paying my bills and I'm running the company, I already know that these things happen.
Yeah. You know, you're glad you bring up the Cass Freight Indices. You know, super important data set because it has so much history.
Yes.
And that history is valuable, for one reason, especially as you're trying to train models and say, okay, I want to predict the next upturn and get ahead of it. I want to predict the next downturn and get ahead of that. And so that data is really good. Cass does a great job, kind of cleaning that data because they are they're a financial auditor.
Sure.
But like you said, there is a lag to paid settled data. They pay 30 days after the load.
So I'm not
delivered.
Saying that data is bad. I'm saying that data is good. However, there was room in the market for data that is much more high frequency much more instant.
I mean, you know, I think about it as like a battlefield commander getting reports versus a historian. Both are very valuable. Both are going to help you make better decisions. You know, one is going to inform, you know, kind of your long-term strategy. One's going to inform your daily operations. But you're absolutely right. You know, we are all about high-frequency data at FreightWaves and in Sonar. And, really, you're going to get 30 reports before somebody who's putting out a monthly number is. Yes, high-frequency data, it may not be as clean and pristine as monthly data, but you're going to get 30 reports. You're going to know which way the wind's blowing before that monthly data.
We might be getting ahead of people. What is high frequency data, and how does sonar work, especially specifically now? How does what are all you data nerderies doing in the background?
Yeah, totally. So high frequency data just tends to mean data that is reported very, very, very often. And, you know, a lot of the frustrations, if you get on financial Twitter, or if you go to some of the conferences that are happening right now, you hear people that are frustrated with the Federal Reserve because they're making decisions with very old data.
Yes.
You know, inflation's still high, but if you look at what's happening in transportation, I mean, massive, massive, massive deflation. Housing. We just got a housing report that said housing prices declined 4.1% in April. But if you look at the data the Fed's using, you know, shelter went up 8%. And so high frequency tends to, you know, it's not extremely well defined, but we say, okay, very, very frequent reporting of data. And so in Sonar, you know, we're reporting, most of our data sets are updating every single day. And so, you know, while that can be a little bit noisy, you definitely are going to find out things sooner. And so, you know, that's why we'll look at things like what's the week over week change instead of quarter over quarter, year over year. So there's ways to smooth out that noise, but the more information you get sooner, that helps you get ahead of, you know, whatever trends are changing. And like you said, people that are using data that maybe is reported on a lag or it's quarterly data, but it comes out 6 weeks after the end of the quarter. You know, you could have had 90, 120 days of data instead of waiting for that quarterly data point. And that's what I think some of the savviest folks in supply chain are starting to do. You know, people in finance with high frequency trading, they figured this out in the 90s. You know, and if you've ever read Flash Boys or any of those books, there's wars about who can get the shortest wire from the server to their algorithmic trading machine. I don't know that we're going to get that extreme in transportation, sure. but that is kind of the trend that is now playing out. Is if you find out things sooner, you know, that can improve your revenue, that can decrease your expense, that can improve your long range capital planning with regards to are we turning up, are we turning down, are we kind of trading sideways.
That data and that analysis led our own Henry Byers to sure. publish this now infamous article, U.S. Import Demand is dropping off a cliff. This one.
This is over a year ago.
This was June 7th.
I'm sorry. This was June. I'm thinking
June 7th. It was almost a year ago. June 7th, 2022. Henry Byers wrote, "Container imports bound for the U.S. have dropped over 36% since May 24th. And that was his first indicator here. He outlined the whole thing throughout there. But you are right. If you look here, what he showed off was the inbound ocean TEU index right here. This is a chart from Sonar. You see that big drop. Now, it was just the start of the cliff. It wasn't a full-on cliff. But he was looking at that. He was looking at credit reports. He was looking at a bunch. And you can pair that with the article you're thinking of, Why I Believe a Freight Recession is Imminent by Craig Fuller, which was published all the way back on March 31st, 2022. And in that one, Craig Fuller pointed to the fact that March is typically a strong month for trucking as shippers start to stock their shelves in preparation for summer. He was seeing this big change, that big boost in anomaly, and he looked at our outbound tender volume index, which is that next chart here, and that was dropping off. And those were the two signals that Henry and Craig took, and they were like, this is a massively shifting market.
I mean, a year ago, every light we had on the dashboard was on.
Yeah.
And that was when we said, something's wrong here, guys. And, you know, people looked at us like we'd grown a second head or something.
It was very controversial. There was a lot of people who reached out. There were people who screamed at us. They said, you're manipulating data. You're changing the books. You're hurting our stock. And we're like, we're not doing anything. This is what's happening in the market.
Look, when rates are going down, we're accused of being a shill for on behalf of freight buyers. When rates are going up, we're accused of being a shill on behalf of carriers. And I mean, look, when the tide's coming in, you can stare at the dunes and pretend you don't see it. It's coming in.
Sure.
You know, and when the tide's going out, it's going out. And so, you know, we don't necessarily affect markets. And sometimes people say, well, you know, you caused this company's stock to drop, and that's irresponsible. You know, what we're doing is reporting on market data conditions. And I think what's been borne out over the last year is, you know, we didn't make something happen. You know, we told you it was going to happen before it did. And you know, eventually your earnings report is going to do to your stock what the news of, you know, declining imports out of China, declining tender rejections, declining freight volumes, and even early declining rates is. It's going to hit these companies eventually. And so high frequency data is about finding out as soon as you can. And, you know, investors have you know, for decades now said, I want to find out data as soon as I can. And now you have people actually operating businesses that say, you know what, if we find out sooner, we can make good decisions sooner too. It's not just about buying or selling a stock. It can be about refreshing your fleet, about, you know, going ahead and adding capacity versus maybe paring back capacity, you know, letting go of those unseated trucks or, you know, going ahead and taking maritime capacity offline when, you know, early in the cycle, when you know this is coming, there are decisions you can make that save money, that save jobs, that, you know, save efficiencies, you know, save carbon emissions. And so, you know, with high frequency data, you can make better decisions. And the smartest companies are doing it. And we're seeing that in their results.
What's a good use case that you have seen, especially since the freight cliff has happened?
Since the freight cliff has happened, so we've talked to a number of I've talked about half a dozen carriers who, you know, within probably 8 to 12 months ago said we're selling our trucks and we're becoming a brokerage.
Yeah,
and you know, everybody said you're crazy. Rates are as good as they've ever been. Those guys smell like roses right now. You know, additionally, I think we've heard about some companies, you know, just now starting to downsize fleets and maybe slow down on recruiting. You know, there are companies that were taking those actions 6 and 8 months ago and, you know, while painful, you know, getting ahead of an asset that sits there and doesn't move.
Sure.
You know, you've seen the used truck prices as well. Used truck prices nearly tripled from 2019 to 2022. Now those are coming right back down.
Well, that's another point that we always make when people talk, oh, you're hurting our stock. You're doing this with the market calls. It's like, look, if this is falling off a cliff and you look at the elevated cost of equipment, there's a lot of people that look to our information or influenced by it if they're going to go out there and put these high notes. And as we just reported last week, a ton of these notes are underwater now because they bought it at $120,000. It's worth $80,000
right
now. But is there anything good going on in the market? So last time our big run-up was done by Ocean. Let's take a look at the Freightos Baltics Index really quick, what it looks like today. Greg Miller, he said that shipping has been under pressure, right? We heard, Zim CFO, what did he say? Zim CFO, this is almost like chef's kiss about this market. He said, it is precisely because some of our customers are pushing for rates below the minimum level that we are willing to go. That's why it's taking a little bit longer for us to make money. We do not intend to lock ourselves into loss-making cargo. They never do. Of course, they're right back where they started before this big pandemic. Although, even with the GRI, things are moving up a little bit.
So we've certainly, through about mid-April, through maybe the first or second week of May, we sort of had a pause and a little bit of relief. The first week of May. In the second week of May, we saw rates decline again. For the last week, they've been picking back up. But, I mean, nowhere near as aggressively as many of these carriers like Zim need to see to operate profitably. This is all modes is what's happening. But rates have picked back up a little bit. I would love to give asset owners a rosy view, but I don't see a ton of green shoots on the horizon. You know, almost like that J.B. Hunt quote from their call. We have behold our field of green shoots. It is barren.
No green shoots. Well, here's some slight pauses, and we started talking about this on the last show in Blitz Week. We saw a little bit of on the inland. We saw
and you
a
had
little
capacity taken out. So maybe that's a glimpse of what happens when a little more capacity is taken out.
So you Memorial Day, you have a couple weeks to stack, and maybe that makes pricing managers a little less sensitive. But in the ocean, this is picking up too. Look, TEUs coming to the U.S. A little bit, and you know, it's not great, but it's the highest it's been in 7 months. So this isn't like a big headline Henry Byers story.
It's a very muted summer peak is what it is. You know, typically, we're kind of changing out what's on the shelves because people buy different things in the summer than they do in the winter. So, you know, this is usually a really big ramp-up time. It's looking like a fairly muted summer ramp-up this year. You know, could we advance for another week or two? Potentially, but you know, generally, we are in the middle and even in the late innings of what is normally that summer peak for freight, and it's pretty soft.
Yeah, the chart, because if you look at the next one here, and the blue line on this one is the truckload rates, and you can see where it fell down, and you got that nice bump to get sort of that little Blitz Week bump. But look, it just puts you right back where you were at the start of May.
Right back where you were.
That's all it really did.
And nobody was feeling great about the beginning of May.
No, it's not like, man, those days of wine and roses back on May 1st, 2023. Yeah,
the halcyon days are not back. And you know, when we look, what are catalysts? What are events out there in the future? You've got student loan repayments starting.
Yeah,
that's not going to be good for the consumer. That's over $1 trillion. You know, another thing is just like. Consumers took out loans at super low rates. Corporate entities took out loans at super low rates. There are trillions and trillions of corporate debt that has to be refinanced soon at higher rates. And so just as people who are resuming the student loan payments are going to get squeezed, corporations are going to get squeezed by higher interest payments coming up soon. So there's not a huge catalyst out there. You know, certainly we've got a deadlock over debt ceiling and what is government spending going to look like. You know, it looks like we're going to, you know, I have to assume there's going to be some compromise there. But, you know, again, it's a compromise means it's not going to be the wanton spending of the pandemic area and stimulus everywhere. So, you know, the three biggest events I can think of on the horizon that would tell us is the consumer going to start buying more tend to say they're not.
So you're not looking. When do you think recovery will happen? When do you think that the Craig Fullers of the world, the Henry Byers, or me and my newsletter on the show, when can I start talking about this recovery?
You know, the great thing about freight and the great and terrible thing about freight is supply chain tends to see what's happening in the broad economy first. So, you know, I think we probably still have some pain for small or even, you know, poorly capitalized asset owners across all modes. And so as some of that capacity gets taken out, and demand, you know, you take out capacity and then demand only has to go up a little bit to really kind of breathe some life into the survivors. And so supply chain transportation companies will see the uptick first before the broader economy does. And when we see supply chain kind of recover, excess capacity taken out and supply demand get to healthier levels, that's when I think we'll say, okay, maybe a spring thaw is around the corner for the broader economy. But that could very well be into next year or at late in the fourth quarter.
All right. Well, save your money, folks.
I wish I had better news. I know, you can't just make it up.
I mean, it is what it is. Yeah. Hold on, I have a couple things to look at with you here, but I gotta tip the band. Send us the hard stuff. That's what Dunavant Logistics says. When you run into that really challenging logistical nightmare that keeps you up at night, call the good folks over at Dunavant. They make headaches disappear. Visit them at dunavant.com. Daniel, by the way, your kid's out of school today. Mine are.
Yeah. School is over. So got to come into the office now because the home office is getting a little chaotic.
It's going to get crowded in here. Well, it was Ironman weekend, right? Speaking of Dunavant, they were in town for the Ironman. Did you run it this year?
I did not do Ironman this year. I was at a kid's soccer tournament.
When your kids get in Alabama, so you got to be selfish, man.
Exactly. But I
saw this bike online, and it says right here, it's a bike with wheels shaped like a, what is that? I'm too dumb. Riolu triangle?
Yeah.
Riolu? Is that how you say that word?
Yeah, Riolu.
Riolu. It's triangle. The simplest and best known curve of constant width other than a circle. Would this make a good, like, what is the point of this bike?
You know, I guess could really shake things out a bit. Maybe take out some knots you need to work out. I don't think I'd want to take that thing 112 miles, 110 miles, whatever it is.
No.
That seems like that'd be pretty terrible. It reminds me of the rotary engine in the old Mazdas.
Interesting. So Iron Man with that. What if it was like an Iron Man slash like pickleball type contest?
You know, I mean, maybe they should, throw in some pickleball, give people the option of this or like a penny farthing bicycle, make a real clown event out of it. We'd probably have to cut the distance down a bit.
Smart move. Well, speaking of our clown world, you're a chief technology officer, so I thought this would be a great topic to bring to you. Did you see this that happened the other day? The AI image of the Pentagon being bombed. These fake Twitter accounts said there was a bombing over at the Pentagon. Now, if you look at the picture, it was clearly AI generated. It wasn't even the Pentagon.
Sure.
Picture wasn't great.
But somebody can put this out and move markets.
This is early innings.
Make a couple million.
Now, they also said the market dumped $500 billion. I mean, the market was doing bad anyway.
So I'm too young to actually have like experienced firsthand War of the Worlds. But have you ever read about the whole War of the Worlds like radio show? Some people did not realize this was fiction. And I think maybe we're kind of seeing a new iteration of this. You know, it's kind of believe none of what you hear and half of what you see. We may have to haircut that down to, like a tenth of what you see here soon or see with your own eyes rather than a photo of. But generative AI is real. It is impressive. It certainly has some limitations, but it can fool a lot of the people a lot of the time.
Do you think we have a major incident where a war is started based over an AI false alarm?
Oh, that's a great question. Could there be skirmishes and conflict? I mean, clearly there has been social unrest and interpersonal conflict in this country.
We fight over the simplest misunderstandings.
Right, or just the simplest ideological
misunderstanding.
Exactly. Well, I watched a YouTube video. Well, I read a paper. You're wrong. You're okay, fine. It's entirely possible. I like to think that, in most sophisticated government military operations, that there is going to be a certain level of vetting. There's going to be, much like our sonar users, we would encourage them to do. Let's look at multiple data points before we make a decision. I'm pretty confident, having known several of the men and women who served our country, that we consider multiple data points. That we're responsible here, but certainly as we've seen, there are governments out there where maybe they're not considering multiple data points, and they're autocratic and very very top down driven. I would not rule it out.
Well, because it's not AI that did this; it's a person that decided to like punk everybody. Although punking someone on something that could turn into like World War III,
I mean, look, it's a lot cheaper than blowing up your own drone over the Kremlin to just make a little AI photo.
See if it works.
Yeah.
What about AI and sonar? You ever any incorporation?
There's absolutely. We've been using machine learning to do forecasting for some time. We've used unsupervised learning to kind of figure out what are the right shapes and zones to do things. as we're trying to figure out how do we, you know, kind of report some of the same data on Mexico.
Yeah.
That there's not as established of a series of zones and market areas there. So using some of that there. You know, all over FreightWaves, it's being used. It's being used a lot on the media side to generate content. It's being used in kind of predictions and drawing maps.
Truck writes its own stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, you cannot be imitated. The AI is not that good yet. But certainly, I think, you know, it is a tool. It is not necessarily at the stage yet where it is a replacement for a lot of things. And, you know, and one challenge with AI is, why did you do what you did? It has no idea. In many cases,
take responsibility.
It is a black box. And you know, I mean, generative AI, it's really good at plagiarism.
Yeah.
But it's plagiarism. It's not doing original thought yet. It's doing really, really great plagiarism.
All right, UPS strike is looming. UPS has 350,000 unionized workers. They deliver 24 million packages a day. UPS says it's 6% of the GDP. August 1st, they say they're going to hold a hard line. They're going to strike if they don't get a deal. Does it happen?
That's a challenge. You know, if ever there was a time for management to play hardball, it would be during a fairly weak period when maybe your profit is only marginal. However, there's still, I mean, We've had a decline in total volume of packages and total revenues, but I can't imagine that these guys don't strike a deal. You know, there's still a lot of parcels moving. There's still a lot of consumer staples that have to move. You know, that are not flexible to price.
Well, the workers though, they don't care about the sonar chart. They said annual profits at UPS in the past years are close to three times what they were before the pandemic and since the last time they signed an agreement in 2018. This is a union, so they already have a pretty strong case.
Sure.
Revenues are up. That's
a challenge, you know. Yeah. But I mean, I think some of this goes back to your comment about stale data. Earnings are what happened in, you know, as somebody that loves daily data, 4 months ago is the distant past to me. So, you know, I think they certainly have a point that a lot of the inflation we've experienced is cost of goods going up.
Sure.
But a lot of it is corporate profit taking as well. And so that, you know, from that standpoint, that is a fair gripe that a significant portion of our inflation has been increasing profits, not just increasing costs. So from that standpoint, they have a fair argument. Certainly, the cost of living for these drivers has gone up. We've experienced it here at FreightWaves that, you know, cost of living for all our employees have gone up. And certainly, there've been competitive pressures in the labor market. You know, maybe easing a little bit, but still the labor market is very, very tight. And so, you know, I think that management will have to negotiate here. They need to find a compromise because no, you know, the drivers don't want to go without paycheck and the management doesn't want to go without revenue coming in the door. So I can't imagine they don't find a compromise here. And as you pointed out, there's an awful large profit margin, still there to protect the company from going negative.
Well, and on the consumer and economic side, I don't know if anyone's there that can step in to pick up 24 million packages a day. I don't think we just have that excess.
I don't think
we even in this market, I don't think
there.
We got that excess capacity.
You know, look, USPS and DHL and FedEx, I'm sure, would love for that to happen, but I don't think that combined they could all handle it in a reasonable amount of time. You're right about that.
Pickett, you ever pay the lumper fees over here? Look at this. Some Redditor is screaming mad. They say that they had it for 2 hour unload. They were charged $1,200. He said it's the biggest ripoff that he has seen to date.
You know, lumper as a it's a necessary thing. I that still strikes me as one of the organized crime.
Organized crime chaos two things. Like, why is there always so much contention over it?
This is a relic of the earlier days of how transportation worked. You know, they provide a good service, but that is an area that is ripe for disruption. If anybody is watching the freight tech scene and you know, looking for a nice, juicy place to sink their teeth, Lumpers is a great opportunity.
Now, if you were driving behind this car on the road, we're going to rate some strap work here. Look at this one that the police officer pulled over. Get the sound up on this one, too, because the cop is going to be kind enough.
Stop this truck.
Get the sound up
behind it. And noticed a load of rebar steel. The middle bundles here.
Yeah, I'm seeing final destination here.
This goes right to the front of the truck.
That's.
And you can see These bundles are wrapped,
obviously,
but yeah, there's no downward pressure being applied by any of these straps.
This seems like how you get a car
or anywhere down the middle of the truck.
Yeah, it's not a magnetic
The bundles aren't touching, which means that as the truck drives down the road, these bundles could move forward or move inwards, which would loosen off these straps as well. And if you've seen the movie Final Destination...
He mentioned Final Destination.
You know why there's a problem.
Do you move when you're behind these vehicles?
Oh, every time I see one of these, I drive with a lead foot, but no. When I see that kind of danger ahead of me, I back it right on off.
There was that just down the street over here. The bar went up from the back of someone's truck, killed someone just last week.
Yes, I heard about that.
It's always so frightening. Every time,
right through the windshield. I mean, look, there's a reason they say don't follow too closely on these things, especially. Especially a flatbed, but you never know what is inside a dry van. And, you know, as my oldest kid starts to approach driving age, and even like when we're on the highway, I tell my wife, like, hey, you don't know what is in the back of that.
Yeah.
It could tip this way and come right through there. You know, make a safe, clean pass. Don't linger beside him in the blind spot.
You're out of time, man. You got to play yourself off. Hey, Daniel Pickett here. Go check out Sonar. Thanks for giving us a little history lesson.
All right. We'll see you guys soon.
Daniel Quicken. Have a great afternoon. Enjoy your Wednesday. Congratulations on graduating to your kids.
Take care.
All you out here, congratulations to your kids. Thanks for joining the show. We'll be here Friday at noon Eastern Time. Find me on Twitter @TimothyDuna. That's DOONER. Take care, and don't be a stranger.